As if viewed through yellow liquid, the roofs of a film studio complex. This melts onto the Warner Brothers crest. A band around this reads Warner Brothers Pictures, and below a caption, a Time Warner Entertainment Company. The screen fades to black. Louisiana, 1869. Nighttime. Swampland tangled with dense overhanging trees. A disc spins through the air. The disc is pursuing a grey-haired old man wearing a wide metallic double collar.
Madman! I must warn the president! Giant spider!
The man turns to face the disc. A gnarled bearded man wearing a battered Confederate uniform and with a small metal trumpet in place of his left ear bends down.
And they say you scientists are supposed to be smart.
He pulls the disc, which has a spider embossed on it, out of the old man's neck. The screen splits into boxes depicting a man in black, wearing a Stetson, walking through fire, drawing a six-shooter, twirling it on his finger, and firing off a number of rounds, sending men flying onto the ground. This is followed by a succession of images of different characters. Warner Brothers presents a Peters Entertainment, Sonnenfeld Josephson production in association with Todman, Simon, LeMasters Productions. A Barry Sonnenfeld film starring Will Smith, Kevin Klein, Kenneth Branagh, Salma Hayek in Wild Wild West. More characters are depicted, then a railroad train tearing down a track. The film also stars Ted Levine, M. Emmett Walsh, Bai Ling, Rodney A. Grant, Garcel Beauvais, Musetta Vanda, Sophia Eng, and Frederica van der Waal. Thin white lines run across the characters' faces and form a spider's web. Wild Wild West performed by Will Smith. Music by Elmer Bernstein. Edited by Jim Miller. Story by Jim Thomas and John Thomas. Screenplay by S.S. Wilson and Brent Maddock and Jeffrey Price and Peter S. Seaman. Produced by John Peters and Barry Sonnenfeld. Directed by Barry Sonnenfeld. Fragments of a beautiful woman's face appear around an octagon. This is replaced by images of tough-looking cowboys. A tiny ramshackle town at dusk. Dimly lit wooden buildings stand either side of a main street with a railroad track running through it. A slatted wooden water tower stands high up on stilts between the buildings. Morgan, West Virginia.
The legendary Captain James West. And I finally got him all to myself.
And Sugar, you should feel free to treat him just bad.
Ooh. Mm.
Inside the water tower, a voluptuous woman and a man with a boyish face, short afro hair and a stubbly chin are bathing. Muscular, dark-skinned West goes to a peephole.
Darling, hold on to that for me for 1 second, will you?
General McGrath's boys. Waiting for y'all for a week, you show up now.
Jim, you wouldn't be working up here tonight now, would you?
Working? Now, would you be working if you were up here with you? Thanks, man.
They start to kiss.
Wagon's coming!
The wagon with two men in Confederate uniforms aboard pulls up by a warehouse.
Come on, boys. We're waiting on the stuff. All right.
Distracted from his clinch, Jim cranes his neck to look through the peephole. Crates of explosives are loaded onto the back of the wagon.
Back it up good, Virgil. Next stop, New Orleans.
Turning towards the peephole, Jim kisses the air. His hungry companion eyes him sternly as he goes through the motions with his back to her. He suddenly turns to look at her.
I'm not working.
She shoves a rag in the hole.
Hold on there, Belle. You can't just go ramming a man's personal things into some hole like that.
Is that so?
I didn't mean it like that, Belle.
Damn, this crate's heavy!
The horses pull the wagon against one of the water tower supports, which cracks.
Much as I'd like to take credit for that, darling,
You might want to hand me my gun.
The tower starts to lean. The horses move forward, snapping the support. The tower topples onto the glass roof of the warehouse. Jim is catapulted through the roof, landing on the ground in front of one of the men from the wagon and two associates. Grimacing, Jim holds up his hand and stands butt naked in front of them.
Woo! That was fun. Which one of you boys wants to strip down and go next? Bet you do. Eh?
Grinning, Jim beckons the man who stares stony-faced.
Sure could use some clothes down here, ma'am.
A black Stetson flies out of the upturned tower. Jim holds it over his groin.
We got us a shiny!
Jim whops the Confederate in the jaw, throws the second man to the ground. The third stares at Jim's groin. Jeans, jacket, boots, and gun belt hit the floor. Meanwhile, across town, a woman drives a large black carriage along a busy street. In the back is a top-hatted man and three women. They pass Fat Can Candy's Gentleman's Club and Saloon. In the busy saloon, a busty, pale-faced redhead wearing an extravagant gown is leaning against the bar, fanning herself. At one of the tables is the gnarled man with the ear trumpet. His face is heavily scarred. Sitting next to him is a suited Native American man with pigtails. The redhead makes eyes at the gnarled man. Standing on a box singing by the piano is a voluptuous brunette wearing a white tasseled dress. The singer ruffles her skirts at the gnarled man, who twists his trumpet to hear her. She winks at him. A grubby-looking man sidles up next to the redhead and whispers to her.
Oh, I'm so sorry. That won't be possible. I have a tonsillitis.
The gnarled man looks up to see a couple of men in Confederate uniforms humping a trunk along the landing. He turns to the Native American.
Well, I'm still waiting on my guns and ammunition. See, my man have brought your merchandise.
General McGrath, your weapons are being delivered as we speak. Now, shall we go upstairs and check the merchandise?
Direct me to the poop, sir. I want something young and creamy. A gamer that takes to the crop and the spur.
You drive a hard bargain. All right, 50 cents.
I'm very flattered, but I'm just not interested.
You gotta be interested. You're a whore.
The redhead turns to the man.
But I work alone.
A black silk flower springs out of the front of the redhead's dress and whacks the grubby man in the face. He's out cold. Meanwhile, two men point rifles at Jim, who's half-dressed. Bell falls out of the tower into his arms. The tower then drops down, encircling the armed men. Jim downs Bell and puts on his hat.
Now I'm working.
He leaps up and grabs a rope hanging from a beam. The rope slides along a track through the warehouse. As the six horses start to pull the wagon loaded with explosives away, Jim leaps onto the back. He doffs his hat, then jammies open one of the crates. It's full of bottles of yellow liquid.
Nitro! This is not the way you transport nitro! Wow!
The horses charge along a track lined with trees. Jim gets into the driver's seat. He launches himself onto the wooden shaft separating the first pair of horses. The corked bottles of nitro waggle precariously in their crate. Jim leaps between the middle pair of horses, then onto the back of the front left horse. Meanwhile, in a back room at the saloon, the man with the ear trumpet, General McGrath, is walking along a line of women scrutinizing their cleavage. The busty brunette singer's at the end of the line. Sticking her chest out, she grins lasciviously at him. The redhead barges in, knocking the brunette out the way.
What's your name, Missy?
Dora?
My mother's name was Dora.
Oh, really?
They bump into the grubby man.
What kind of lady are you?
McGrath shoots him.
Mine.
He grabs Dora by the waist.
I feel like a ditty. Little girl, sing.
He thrusts her up onto the box by the piano.
Sons of the South.
McGrath turns his trumpet down. Yellow goo drips out. He turns the trumpet back up. Dora stares agog, then turns to the pianist. Meanwhile, Jim's trying to stop the horses, who are charging towards the edge of a steep embankment. At the bottom, across a railroad track, is the saloon. The horses stop. Jim flies over the top and hangs off a leather strap.
All right. Okay. Back on up now.
The horses slowly back up. Jim hoists himself onto the edge of the embankment, then looks across at the saloon, where McGrath is sitting enjoying Dora's performance.
General Bloodbath McGrath.
In the saloon, Dora writhes against a pillar, then trots back and forth with a big grin across her face. The motley collection of men at bar tables lap it up. Two balconies lined with partially clothed men and women in frilly dresses join in the applause. Jim peers in through a window, then climbs up onto a balcony. McGrath and Dora go upstairs. Jim treads across beams jutting from the outside wall. Dora opens the door to a room.
That's a new one. Look.
Dora looks in another room where the men with the trunk are sitting. On the floor is a sack with a body writhing in it.
I'll say.
Jim continues stepping round the outside. Alone in a room with Dora, McGrath takes off his cap.
Don't let the ear frighten you, my little duff. I lost it at Chickamauga.
Really? One can hardly notice. Would you help me undress? I always have trouble undoing this clasp. Thank you. Are you feeling sleepy?
Yes, I'm sleepy.
Good. Now you're going to be my little doggy. And when I say speak, you're going to tell me everything I want to know. Understood? Very good. Now tell me, who's in that sack in the other room? Which scientist is it? Is it Dr. Escobar? Speak. You can speak words, you stupid mutt. Who do you work for? Who paid you to kidnap Escobar? Speak. No. Watch the swirling spiral. Watch the swirling...
Bad dog.
Watch... Oh, damn!
Shame!
They've stopped swirling. McGrath pulls a knife from his boot. Jim comes crashing in through the window. He knocks McGrath out with a punch.
Didn't mean to startle you, ma'am. Looked like he could use a little help.
Well, looks can be deceiving, Dark Stranger. I'm perfectly fine.
I'm sure you are, ma'am. Big sturdy gal like you probably gets top dollar, too. There you go. Won't you run along, darling? I'm gonna sing my old friend General McGrath here a little lullaby.
I need him!
Come on, lady, you got your money. Now run along. Have a little dignity.
McGrath leaps off the floor and barges Jim through the wall, rolling over a man and woman in bed. McGrath lays a punch on Jim and runs out. The woman pulls a gun from a holster on the bed. Jim aims at her.
That'd be an awful career decision, darling.
He throws her gun out the window, then walks through the door. A Confederate soldier punches Jim, who kicks and knees him to the floor. McGrath sends more men after Jim, who duly dispatches them. Meanwhile, a soldier carries the body in the sack out of the room, followed by the Native American man. Dora runs up holding a bottle of perfume.
Get Escobar out here!
Stop or I'll squeeze!
Jim bumps into Dora. They turn to each other.
U.S. Army, stay out of my way, lady!
I'm not a lady, I'm a U.S. Marshal! Stay out of my way!
Get out of my way. Get out of my way. U.S. Army, U.S. Marshal.
Oh, dear.
Up on the hill.
Federal agents inside, sir.
Some Miss Lippenreader informs me, Mr. Hudson. Still, I believe good manners dictate that we should send out the welcome wagon.
The top-hatted man in the carriage extends a cane and unhooks the wagon full of nitro. It starts to roll down the embankment towards the saloon. Inside...
Now what?
The wagon crashes into the saloon and the nitro explodes, ripping the building apart. A clear day in Washington, D.C. Small horse-drawn buggies and horses with riders stir up dust on Pennsylvania Avenue. In the distance, the Capitol Dome stands dominant. Captain Jim West, wearing a black suit, white high-collared shirt, black tie, black hat and sunglasses, rides up on a black horse. He dismounts by a pair of open gates. He ties his reins to a post. Sheep are grazing on the lawns out in front of the White House. Jim marches confidently up a path towards a grand porticoed entrance. He walks straight into an ornate hallway.
Whoa there, partner. When in the war, may have got you 40 acres and a mule, but you can't just traipse into the president's office. Now give me that gun.
What, that one? What about that one?
As the man reaches for the gun on Jim's hip, Jim pulls a second gun from inside his coat.
That'll get you killed.
Gentlemen,
Don't make Captain West any later than he already is for his appointment.
Jim holsters his guns and walks into an office where a bearded man wearing a knee-length coat is waiting.
Sorry, Jim, there's been a lot of death threats lately. The cabinet made me hire these damn detectives. Drink? Cigar?
Don't mind if I do, sir.
So I understand you let General McGrath get away.
That's not exactly the way it happened, sir. Some half a sissy masquerading as...
Artemus Gordon.
You know him.
Of course I know him. He's the best marshal I've got. Kind of genius. Gordon has proven himself time and again as a very cunning operator with a rapacious intellect. Nothing will stop him from completing a mission for his president, except maybe the impulsive actions of a headstrong cowboy.
Jim points a gun at the man.
What do you mean, who am I? I am the president of the United States.
Wrong answer.
He shoots the ceiling, sending down lumps of plaster.
Who are you? I am the president. I'm Artemus Gordon. How did you know?
Jim taps the man's ring.
President went to West Point. That says Harvard.
Very observant.
Another bearded man enters.
Somebody mind telling me what the hell is going on here? President Grant,
Gordon removes his beard.
These are perilous times. I was merely demonstrating how someone using the art of disguise could penetrate into the very bowels of the White House, sir. You're clever, Gordon. One day it's going to get you killed.
Like today.
Gordon removes his deflated false belly.
West, not every situation calls for your patented approach of shoot first, shoot later, shoot some more, and then when everybody's dead, try to ask a question or two. Working together will be good for the two of you. Working together.
Well, sir, with all due respect.
You will work the way your commander-in-chief tells you to work. Well, yeah, I was coming to that, sir.
Gordon, previously red-headed Dora, and Jim follow Grant through a secret door into a dimly lit office where two lines of men are busy at desks.
Gentlemen, America's top scientists in the fields of physics, hydraulics, explosives, all kidnapped in the last year, and all by General McGrath, it now appears. You two have been working on the same case the whole time. Why did it take you so long to figure it out?
Well, sir, because one of us was trying to catch McGrath and the other was trying to marry him.
We don't have time for this. Only 1 week, if we're to believe this.
A letter.
General Grant, the scientists that you seek are in my employ creating a weapons system beyond the pale of contemporary imagination. History and justice are on my side. I suggest you put your affairs in order. You have 1 week before you will surrender the U.S. government.
The letter was delivered today with that cake.
Gordon lifts the lid on a glass cake box.
It's marzipan, isn't it? Careful.
Large black spiders crawl over the cake.
It's McGrath, sir.
Sir, McGrath may be a vicious killer, but a mastermind he is not. So whom do we seek? Now, after consulting with intelligence,
sir, General McGrath is on his way to New Orleans. The longer we stand here and talk about it, the farther away he gets. And I don't need intelligence to tell me that.
No, you'd rather rely on stupidity. Gentlemen, I am leaving today for Utah, where the transcontinental railroads will be joined at Promontory Point. Look, you two are the best I've got. Put aside your differences and find this madman, whoever he is, and stop him. You have 1 week. Dismissed.
Jim and Gordon salute President Grant, turn and head towards the door. A man walks up with a large...
Proposal. Engine number 5, track 6. Mr. Gordon, the item you requested?
With a satisfied smile, Gordon takes the hat box. Outside, Jim gets on his horse. Gordon rolls up on a motorized penny farthing.
My new invention. I call it the bivalve interior combustion, twice exhausted, biaxial nitrocycle.
Save it. Got a train to catch.
Yeah!
Jim rides off.
Not if I catch it first.
Gordon pulls on a pair of goggles and turns a lever on the handlebars.
Avanti!
Gordon grips the handlebars and the penny farthing pulls away, whipping his head back. Flames leap from exhaust pipes running from a motor attached to the enormous front wheel. Gordon tears along the dirt road and overtakes Jim, swathing him in a cloud of smoke. Smoke now pours from the wide-topped chimney of the Wanderer, the President's steam locomotive, as it roars along a track flanked by trees. On the front of the engine is a number 5. The driver, a white-haired, craggy-looking man, leans out of his cab and looks straight ahead. Jim gallops up alongside.
Gordon!
Jim rides up next to the second of two carriages. Jim peers into the plush carriage. Gordon's sitting in an armchair. he's knitting chainmail.
Hey! I'm warning you! Gordon, stop the train!
Come in. Have a seat.
Gordon, stop the train! Stop smiling! Help me!
Jim climbs off his horse and leaps onto the back of the carriage. A platform springs him in the air. As he comes down, a hole opens in the roof and he lands in a chair next to Gordon.
Oh, nice of you to drop in.
All right.
Jim stands up indignantly.
Let's drop the beards, the bikes, the fake boobies. Why don't we set that needlepoint aside and let's handle this like men.
As a matter of clarification, this is not needlepoint. This is needlepoint. I'm just putting the final touches on my latest invention. I call it the impermeable. It's a vest which, when worn under the clothing, can stop any modern bullet fired even at close range.
Is that so?
But I haven't tested it fully yet. Guns. I find them so primitive and completely unnecessary if one's done one's proper planning. I must tell you, Mr. West, I have always felt that allowing any situation to degenerate into physical violence constitutes a failure on my part.
Well then, Mr. Gordon, you failed.
Jim punches Gordon on the nose.
All right, Mr. West, we'll settle this like men.
Gordon weaves his hands mysteriously, lifts a leg, spins round, then whacks the sole of his shoe against a plaque which reads, "Do not push." A mallet comes down from the ceiling and knocks Jim back onto a pool table. Straps appear, pinning him down, and the table sinks and swivels, hanging Jim upside down facing the tracks. Gordon sits in an armchair and drinks a glass of wine.
By the way, while you're down there, please, feel free to make use of my subcarriage interrail vehicular egressor. I've signed it myself!
Jim pulls a lever and Gordon's chair turns upside down.
Maybe the president's right. We should put aside our differences and work together!
They re-enter the carriage where the driver's standing.
All you please, but harm my train, I'll douse you like dogs.
Coleman, that's my trouble reduction sauce.
Well then, let's get on about our president's business, shall we, gentlemen? Now, where to?
New Orleans.
Why don't we let Professor Morton decide?
Who? Well, I don't need some nobody professor telling me where to head.
In a lab.
Professor Thaddeus Morton, kidnapped from MIT 6 months ago. Expert in the field of metallurgy. Discovered in a field of alfalfa.
That's a man's head.
This magnetic collar was found about 6 feet away, near his body. Still trying to figure that one out.
That's a man's head.
According to the retinal terminus theory, a dying person's last conscious image is burned into the back of his eyeball, rather like a photograph. Perhaps there's a clue there. I give you Morton's last image.
That's a man's head.
The head is that of the man chased by the disc. Held in a clamp, Gordon shines light through the eyes onto a screen.
Refraction of the lenses causes the image to appear upside down, so we simply...
In the lab, which is in the other carriage, Gordon turns a crank, and the head revolves, projecting a blurred image. Unnerved, Jim pulls a face.
That is a man's head.
Voila.
McGrath.
Seems to have something in his pocket, but it's too fuzzy to make out. Modification of the aqueous humor has led to a loss of
glasses.
Jim puts glasses on the head. The now clear image is that of McGrath holding the disc. There's an invite in his pocket.
Friends of the South, come to a costume ball, April 14, 8:30, 346 Pine Court Garden District.
New Orleans.
The Wanderer chugs through a rolling landscape.
Gypsy Queen, Pirate. Ah, how about this? You can come as my manservant.
Oh, why, yes, sir, Master Gordon. Oh, I swears I'd be delighted. I'll sing, I'll dance for you, sir. Oh, and I swears none of the other white folks will know I'd rather shoot myself than play your damn manservant.
You have to wear something. It's a costume party.
Well, this is all I need to wear right here.
All right, if you insist on wearing a firearm, I have something which I think you'll find most intriguing. I designed it to go with this.
A gun pops out of a buckle.
Jim West does not wear costumes.
Very well. What's your plan?
How about this? I was thinking I'd go as a government agent who's going to shoot and kill General Bloodbath McGrath.
An armed Negro cowboy costume in a room full of white Southern former slave owners. You'll win first prize. Now listen, the art of disguise is what we need to get into the party in order to find the kidnapped scientists before they're forced to create something that will destroy the United States. You and I have been handpicked by the president himself Our freedom is at stake, and this is our duty as men. Now, you go as a riverboat captain, and I'll be a saloon girl.
Let me tell you something about your beloved art of disguise, Gordon. That night at Fat Cans, it wasn't a difficult task to see that you weren't a woman.
I was propositioned by three men.
You looked nasty. Just butt ugly. I mean, your breasts were hard and stiff and sticking out like a couple of rusty cannons on a sunken ship.
These breasts are a work of art. Aesthetically and scientifically perfect. Touch them.
I'm not touching those things.
What are you afraid you're wrong? Touch my breasts. Just one. Touch one.
Okay. Are you happy, Gordon? I'm touching your breasts.
I knew it.
A grand two-story mansion house with latticed windows covering the front and a large circular window at the top. Carriages arrive and drop off costumed guests at the doors. A buggy pulls past. Hanging underneath the axle is Jim, dressed in black. He drops from under the buggy and rolls to his feet. A man in a uniform steps up to him.
What are you doing here, boy?
Jim takes off his hat.
I was hoping I wouldn't have to break your nose.
Having floored the man with a punch, Jim coolly puts his hat back on. He climbs up some vines, grabs hold of a balcony rail, and pulls himself up onto the first floor. He walks into an ornate study.
Why, folks?
In a neighboring room.
Get your hands off me! Put me in the dungeon with all those smelly, dirty, bearded men, but I'm not getting on that.
You applied for the position.
A standing-up position. I'm an entertainer.
It's the woman from the black carriage.
You enjoy it.
Jim slopes off through a side door onto the landing above a great hall full of costumed guests. He puts a cheroot in his mouth. A woman in oriental costume walks up behind him.
An authentic cowboy outfit, complete with six guns. What a terribly clever costume, Mr.
West.
They face each other.
West. Well, West meets East. Millie East.
Ma'am?
Are you here alone, Mr. West?
Well, actually, I'm looking to surprise an old friend, General McGrath. You haven't seen him by chance?
I don't think their name was on our guest list, and I would know. I am Dr. Lovelace's personal assistant.
Dr. Arliss Lovelace? Funny how some folks think he's dead.
Tonight is his coming out party.
Miss East takes Jim by the arm.
Anybody that looks familiar?
A masked redhead.
I am jealous.
Don't be.
Miss East disconsolately starts to walk down a flight of stairs, then turns back to Jim.
In a 4 year.
Jim doffs his hat as Miss East walks down the stairs. A string quartet plays in an alcove. In front of a glass screen with a spider's web frame, the women from the black carriage stand in line singing. One dressed as Boadicea, Amazonia. One dressed in a frilly basque, Munitia. One wearing a Germanic bodice, Miss Lippenreader. And Miss East. The screen opens and a model of Abraham Lincoln's torso, wearing a suit, a top hat, and his right hand raised, appears. It rolls into the hall on a plinth with two columns rising out of it. Lincoln explodes, revealing the top-hatted man from the black carriage, Dr. Lovelace.
Don't you just hate that song?
Miss Lippenreader and Amazonia open a pair of gates and long-haired, bearded Lovelace rolls down a ramp in a wheelchair. He has no legs.
Why, you all look like you've seen a ghost.
He grins. It's
me, dear friends. Alive and kicking. Well, alive anyway. We may have lost the war, but heaven knows we haven't lost our sense of humor. No, not even when we lost a lung, a spleen, a bladder, two legs, 35 feet of small intestine, and our ability to reproduce all in the name of the South, do we ever lose our sense of humor?
The guests stare at him.
Now, I owe a deep debt of gratitude to our friends from across the sea for their comfort and kindness. So, mi casa es su casa. Bet comme chez vous. Let the party begin! Mr. West.
He wheels himself to the bottom of the stairs as Jim walks down. Miss East steps over.
Nice of you to join us tonight and add color to these monochromatic proceedings.
Well, when a fella comes back from the dead, I find that an occasion to stand up, be counted.
Miss East informs me that you're expecting to see General McGrath here. Well, I knew him years ago, but I haven't seen him in a coon's age.
Well, I can see where it'd be difficult for a man of your stature to keep in touch with even half the people you know.
Well, perhaps the lovely Miss East will keep you from being a slave to your disappointment.
Well, you know beautiful women. They encourage you one minute and cut the legs out from under you the next.
Quiet. Excuse me, Mr. West.
Jim nods. With a sneer, Lovelace wheels himself away. Miss East eyes Jim sternly. Down a corridor, Bloodbath McGrath is waiting, a long sword hanging from his hip. He irritably scratches his beard. Lovelace wheels himself down the black and white marble-floored corridor towards McGrath.
General McGrath.
Yes, sir.
They go into a grand study. Jim spots the busty redhead he saw earlier. Holding a mask to her face, she's talking to a man dressed as a trapper, with a raccoon skin hat. Jim puts his arms around the woman and grins at the trapper.
You're in for a big surprise when you get this one in the saddle.
Jim walks off.
Stupid cowboy, eh? He mistake you for me.
The trapper's Gordon in disguise. Horrified, the redhead lowers her mask. Jim goes and listens outside the study, which is lined with portraits. Lovelace is behind a desk.
The nitro and the guns were destroyed at Fat Cans. License demoralization is set in.
General McGrath, if I may interrupt, your men will have their weapons tonight. And my promise that they will be part of the greatest military victory of this century. So, have your men here.
He draws a cross on a map near a lake.
At 10 o'clock tonight.
McGrath takes the map.
You, sir, are a pip. I'd follow you into the jaws of Cerberus itself.
And so you shall.
Lovelace smiles and wheels himself to the doors, which automatically open. Jim darts to one side out of the way. As McGrath and Lovelace leave the study, Jim emerges from his hiding place behind a curtain. He strolls up to the gold-paneled doors, tries the handles, then glances down the hall. He turns his back to the doors. Jim kicks the doors open and goes in. Gordon, in his trapper costume with tasseled jacket, glances at a balcony where Munisha and Amazonia keep watch as Miss Lippenreader locks a door. In the study, Jim takes a pencil rubbing on a piece of paper from the leather-topped desk. The map is revealed. Miss East enters. Jim looks up and pulls a knife. Miss East unclips her gown, revealing her tight-fitting dress and exposing her ample cleavage. She walks round to Jim, who sits on the desk facing a painting of a hunter.
I said to meet me in the foyer.
Foyer? Well, I've never been much good with French.
She kisses him, open-mouthed.
Au contraire.
They swap places.
So let's see, Mr. West. Are you a dangerous spy of some sort? Or just a handsome cowboy?
I believe I'm that second one.
She stares into his eyes.
East and West. Never the twain shall meet.
Jim's back's to the painting which has come alive. The hunter takes aim. Jim turns and ducks. The hunter shoots Miss East. Jim throws the hunter to the ground and shoots him. Then a number of assailants have appeared from the other paintings in the room. Jim strides out. A body falls from the ceiling. Jim marches past the extravagantly costumed guests who are dancing in lines down the hall. He grabs the masked redhead's arm.
First of all, I would like to reiterate that you make one ugly woman.
Okay.
They join in the dance.
Secondly, while you were out here hopping and reeling, I found out that our host, Dr. Lovelace, is meeting McGrath and his troops at Malrow Point in an hour.
Huh?
So you go right ahead, you enjoy the party. I'm gonna save the Republic. By the way, boobies look great tonight.
She lowers her mask and slaps him.
Hang him!
On the stairs, Gordon holds up a reel of rope. A suited man and a white-wigged man in uniform lead Jim outside, along with the rest of the guests.
Like we need to teach you all a little lesson about how to behave in polite society.
Upstairs, Gordon goes to the door he heard the cries from earlier. He picks the lock and goes into a room decked out like a torture chamber. In the corner is a caged woman in her underwear. It's the voluptuous singer from the saloon.
My God. Oh, excuse me, am I intruding? I'm sorry, but I feel as if I know you from somewhere.
Nice try, Buster.
Please, I realize I look like something out of James Fenimore Cooper, but I assure you I mean you no harm. My name is Artemis Gordon, and if I'm not mistaken, you're in trouble. Allow me.
I'm Rita, and I was hired here as an entertainer. Not that I'm complaining, but what are you doing here?
I'm looking for some missing scientists. Not that I'm complaining.
Pumping a tube with his heel, he operates a circular saw that cuts through the cage's padlock.
I'm a special U.S. Marshal on assignment from the President.
If you're so special, how come you're looking up here when Lovelace has them all working down in the dungeon?
I'm afraid the dungeon has been cleared out. That was the first place I checked after sampling the gumbo, which was a bit heavy on the okra.
He opens the cage.
Thank you. Artemis, was it?
It was. I don't forget a face that easily.
Jim's on a wagon by a noose.
I'd like to have everybody's attention for a moment. I do believe we have had a series of major misunderstandings this evening, and I'd like to take a minute to clear a few of them up. Now, in my native land,
Georgia?
Africa. My ancestors used drums to communicate between villages. Now, I'm sure all y'all can see how, with this guy, we could communicate all the way to Baton Rouge. Hell, on a clear night, we might even get Galveston. All I was saying to the gal was, nice dress, darling. Good to see you. My name's Jim. How's your mama? Then there was the redneck comment. And I'm getting a sense that y'all took that negatively. But let's break down that word, redneck. First word, red. Color of passion, fire, power. Second word, neck.
He holds up two fingers.
Neck.
The noose hangs from a tree beside him.
All right, I can't think of anything for neck right now, but without it, y'all still got red, and that's something to be really proud of. And between us, the whole slavery thing, I don't understand what the big deal was anyway. I mean, come on, who wouldn't want folks running around doing things for them, doing chores? I mean, are you going to get your big fat ass up out of the bed in the morning and pick your own damn cotton? I don't think so. So come on, y'all, let's head on inside. Knock us back some shine. Kick this shindig off the right way. Come on now. Come on, inside. Everybody, put this thing away. Put that. Come on, let's go inside.
Oh, let's hang it.
Hold on. And I stand before you as a man realizing that I have done something wrong. And darling, I'd like the opportunity to make it right.
The redhead smiles.
Marry me.
She keels over. Gordon rides up in a buggy with Rita at his side. Jim grabs the noose and jumps off the wagon. The rope stretches and he hits the floor.
There's something funny about the damn rope.
Jim grabs the wig man's gun and throws him over. Jim pulls back on the rope and catapults himself into Gordon's buggy.
Hang him! I'm gonna shoot you right now.
Allow me to introduce you to my trigger-happy partner, James West.
Ma'am.
Who doesn't seem to realize that my expanding rope invention was part of a carefully planned diversion allowing me to search for the missing scientists.
Scientists?
Yes! Oh, this is Rita. I found her in a cage in Lovelace's bedroom. She's an entertainer.
I'm afraid I haven't been quite honest with you about that. My name is Rita Escobar. I came to find Guillermo Escobar, the scientist, my father.
Sorry to interrupt you gals' reunion, but I gotta get to Malro Point.
Malro Point? Yeah.
He leaps onto one of the horses, unhooks it, and rides off.
So impetuous.
Yes, he's an idiot.
On a warship on a lake, Lovelace is with McGrath and a number of foreign delegates. One has a small dog.
It's been a long journey from New Liberty.
Well, there's not a day that goes by that I don't contemplate it, sir.
Yeah, so do I. If I had only had the scientific understanding of gunpowder and primers that I have today, I might have been standing here.
That's not what I meant.
Oh, you meant the stomach-churning carnage that earned you your unfortunate nom de guerre.
What was that nickname again?
McGrath shifts on his feet uneasily.
Bloodbath McGrath. The Butcher of New Liberty.
He looks across to a field where a group of his soldiers are assembled around campfires.
Be here by now. Maybe we're in the wrong place.
No, we're supposed to wait exactly on this here spot.
The soldier gets out a ragged map and points to it. The large group of men suddenly look round, concerned. an armor-plated tank rolls up out of the lake. The tank has a curved belly, flat-sided oval turret, and guns poking out of it. A large cannon protrudes from the front, and on top, at the rear, is a chimney. The tank creeps into the middle of the men on steel spiked wheels. They gather in a circle around it and start applauding. The men raise their caps and wave admiringly at the mechanical beast. A blast of fire shoots out of the cannon, the turret rotates, and the guns at the sides mow down the men. On the warship.
Betrayed us!
My dear General, having donated half of my physical being to create a weapon capable of doing this, how did you and General Lee repay my loyalty? You surrendered at Appomattox. So who betrayed whom? Munitia, make note, the turret speed needs to be accelerated.
Change gear ratio from 2.2 to 2.8.
Amazonia signals.
Scream, help me, do not pull my arm.
Loveless, I demand that you give the order to stop this slaughter now!
We're gonna need more loading drills, I'm hearing too much time between screams.
You give them the order to desist!
General, I understand your distress, but believe me, these men are not dying senselessly. It is for a far greater cause than you can possibly imagine.
You go straight to hell, sir!
After you, sir.
Loveless shoots McGrath with a gun in the back of his chair. The dog runs over to have a look.
Bloodbath McGrath, indeed. Well, that concludes the festivities. Ladies, feed them to the crabs. Gentlemen, since the beginning of written history, a nation's power has been determined by the size of its standing army. Tonight, that chapter will be closed. The traditional army, to say nothing of the United States, will become extinct, laid low by a cripple, as the general so amusingly implied, and mechanology. But, my friends, that tank is just a little hors d'oeuvre compared to what the country's greatest scientists are cooking up for me next. So, if I have piqued your interest, bring 1,000 kilograms of your country's gold to Spider Canyon within the next 4 days. And now, if you'll excuse me, I have a tank to catch.
He wheels himself away, followed by his tall, leggy henchwomen, Miss Lippin Reader, Amazonia, and Munitia. Meanwhile, the tank rolls across the field, which is strewn with bodies. Later, the tank stands straddling a railroad track. A small set of wheels swing down from its undercarriage. The wheels rest on the tracks. Miss Lippenreader and Amazonia guide Munitia, who, standing in an open hatch in the turret, reverses the tank into the open shell of an armor-plated rail carriage, which then clamps shut around the tank. As a single gargantuan armored train, it begins to move forwards. The dark steel riveted sides glisten in the moonlight as the train gathers speed. Loveless sits at the open back. Jim rides up to the scene of the massacre. Smoke from a burning wagon wafts over the field of bodies. Jim dismounts. His face fills with melancholy as he studies the ground. He walks between the corpses of men and horses lying twisted unnaturally on the grass. Gordon rides up with Rita at his side.
Whoa.
Gordon climbs down, then lifts Rita off the buggy.
There.
He surveys the scene.
Came out of the lake, and judging from the position of these bodies, it laid down a 360-degree pattern of cannon fire.
I think I'm going to be sick.
My God. What kind of weapon did this?
It rolls on and on, making a screeching sound like a wounded animal. It has a cabin on top with a cannon. It swivels around like an eagle's head.
You saw it?
Heard about it. Thought it was crazy survivor stories.
Survivors?
Not here. New Liberty, Illinois, free slave town just over the border. Week before the war ended in 65, I was with the 9th Cavalry. We discovered old folks, women, children slaughtered. They use them for target practice.
Jim walks over to the water's edge, where McGrath lies in the mud by some reeds. The front of his shirt is covered in blood. McGrath tries to lift his head up off the ground.
That's when I vowed to chase this yellow devil to his grave.
What's wrong, Wes? I thought you'd be glad to see me like this.
Actually, I'm kind of disappointed. I was hoping I'd get to kill the Butcher of New Liberty myself.
Go on, shoot me. Send me on to hell. But if you want the devil that's responsible for New Liberty, it's Loveless. He manned the machine there. He killed all them children, old folks. Just like he killed my boys here.
Jim glances round.
Where is he? Where did he go?
McGrath's head lolls back onto the mud. Jim grabs him by the front of the shirt.
Where's he going?
I know that.
Jim drops him.
I'll tell you if you take me along.
You'll tell me or I'll leave you here.
Rita thinks for a moment.
The girls at the mansion, you know, they talk. I wonder if my hair will get frizzy in the desert. Where is this Utah anyway?
Jim and Gordon share a look. On the Wanderer...
Let's go, Coleman, Utah.
Aye, sir.
Coleman goes to the front. Jim and Gordon sit down. Gordon looks out the window.
I don't understand why we couldn't give her a ride back home to Texas. It is on the way.
On our way to Utah, where our president happens to be. How do you feel about that little coincidence?
Gordon gazes down at the platform where Rita, with a coat draped around her underwear, is standing looking up at him pleadingly. As the Wanderer starts to move, Rita lifts her arm and waves, revealing her ample cleavage. Gordon moves to the next window to get a good look at her.
Marty!
We wouldn't have even known where Loveless was going if it hadn't been for her.
Seems a bit ungracious.
It's not perilous.
If she'd have gotten on a train, she'd have been in our way. She and I'd have wound up in the saddle.
It's funny, I got the feeling she was much more interested in me.
The Wanderer roars through open country. A blue-black sky hangs above.
You know, I've been trying to place myself in Loveless's shoes.
Good luck with that one.
But what could this demented maniac with no reproductive organs want with Rita? Which is not to
she drops in.
Doesn't possess a beauty worthy of a Shakespeare sonnet or a Botticelli painting. God, the curvature of her buttocks and the swell of that magnificent bosom. So full, so sumptuous. So what were all those foreign ministers doing at Loveless's party? This is what really puzzles me. Do you have any idea there were so many and so foreign? How long has she been here?
Somewhere around Botticelli's buttocks.
She starts eating the food.
Profoundly, sir.
Allow me to spare you the embarrassment. Make yourself a sandwich. You're getting off the train.
I know why those foreign guys were at Loveless's party.
Jim picks up a speaking tube.
This is fantastic. How'd you cook it? I mean, you can cut it with a fork.
In a Daubière. It's a clay pot. It's a French method.
Foreign ministers.
Oh, they were mad about something, you know, like there was some real bad deal in Louisiana on purpose.
The Louisiana Purchase.
Mm-hmm. And Queen somebody of France got swindled.
Queen Isabella of Spain.
That's ridiculous. Coleman, stop the train. Miss Escobar's getting off.
Who the hell's Miss Escobar?
I'm a frightened, starving, half-naked young woman who only wants to find her father.
Half-naked?
Coleman, stop the train.
We're not putting anybody off out here in the middle of nowhere. Especially if they're half-naked.
Please, Jim. My father's the only family I've got. What am I supposed to do? Just sit home and wait for news that he's been killed? Or go do something? What would you do, Jim?
I don't have anything against you, Rita. My only problem is what's going to happen when we catch up with Loveless and you're still on this train.
Oh, Jim. I know you'd never let him take me back. I've seen you shoot.
She kisses him.
Rita, let me assure you that any attack by Loveless would be an exercise in futility. Allow me to demonstrate how some of my design suggestions have made the Wanderer completely impervious to attack. Over here, three seemingly innocent billiard balls, yes?
He juggles them.
To press the number, it becomes a sleeping gas bomb, effective in under 3 seconds. So put your mind at ease. You are completely safe within these walls.
I don't know about you, ma'am, but I'm certainly going to sleep better, assuming that Loveless barges in here and wants to play a game of pool.
And speaking of sleeping, I'm really tired, Artie. Do you think I could borrow something to wear?
Oh, I have just...
I got something you could wear. It ain't stylish, but it won't explode when you put it on either.
That would be nice.
Gordon looks on powerlessly as Rita smiles and walks over to Jim. The mighty locomotive charges on through the night. Gordon and Jim ruminate as they relax in their carriage.
Nicholas has kidnapped a few metallurgists, so whatever he's building is going to have armor. He kidnapped a couple chemists, so he's going to have explosives. And according to you, Rita's father's the foremost expert in hydraulics in the world, so the thing's going to move. What the hell could he be building that's going to make the president surrender the U.S. government?
A bedside heater.
Jim looks at him. What?
Rita, she needs a bedside heater. It gets quite chilly back there.
That's exactly what I was talking about, the distraction.
What?
Rita steps in wearing a set of baggy white combinations.
Well, good night, and thank you for saving me.
Good night, ma'am.
Well, sweet dreams.
Jim lowers his Stetson as Gordon shuts his eyes and lies back on the couch. Jim glances over at Gordon, whose eyes suddenly spring open in realization of what they've said. Next day, the Wanderer thunders through the rocky western landscape, the grizzled, white-haired Coleman at the controls. He spies another train up ahead, which turns right through some trees. Coleman calls back into the carriage through the speaking tube.
700 yards and closing.
Maintain this speed, Coleman. I'm coming up.
Jim stands and a spike shoots out of his boot.
I took the liberty of installing that while you were sleeping.
Gordon marches off.
Don't take liberties with my things.
Very good.
I've only made one or two other little additions to your wardrobe.
Coleman stares out through the locomotive window as he follows Lovelace's tank and armored carriage into a dark tunnel cut through a hillside. He squints through the blackness, which envelops the Wanderer as it rumbles through. The track veers left, and the tunnel exit comes into view. The Wanderer rattles out into the sunshine and passes between four thin metal pylons.
Is something here?
Lovelace's tank appears to have vanished, leaving the track ahead empty. After the Wanderer's second carriage has emerged from the tunnel, the metal pylons telescopically contract and lower Lovelace's tank, still joined up to its armored carriage, down onto the track. Inside, Munisha operates the controls, while Lovelace sits behind her, grinning slyly. The pylons tilt and fold up into compartments within the body of the carriage. The tank sets off after the Wanderer. In the rear carriage of the Wanderer, Gordon is tinkering with a contraption that looks a bit like a gramophone. He glances out of the rear window, and his expression becomes grave.
Jim.
Gordon opens the rear doors and steps onto the carriage platform.
We are pursuing Lovelace. Why is he behind us?
The tank bears down on them and fires.
That's why.
The missile explodes against a bank of earth beside the carriage. Jim grabs Gordon's rope.
Nothing, it's fine. Get down.
Okay.
Jim gets on the pool table.
A little magic button. What are you doing?
We'll see if your aggressor invention works.
We need a plan.
Push the button.
Very good.
Gordon pushes the button. Jim's flipped over through the carriage floor.
He's so courageous.
Jim lies on a trolley and is lowered towards the track.
Would you mind pulling on one of those pool cues for me?
This one?
Thank you.
She pulls a cue and a handle emerges from the carriage floor.
Courage is only as good as the machinery that supports it.
Gordon winds the handle, and Jim is slowly fed out from under the carriage on the wheeled trolley. They watch him pass the trapdoor. Gordon winds the handle, which feeds out more cable connecting Jim to the train. Jim gradually rolls close to the tank. As the cable snaps, Jim rattles towards the tank at high speed. Jim hurtles underneath the tank on his trolley. He grabs Gordon's rope and lassos a hook at the back of the armored carriage. The rope stretches like elastic and catapults Jim back and forth underneath the carriage. Jim grabs onto a metal rung and flips up in a somersault, landing on his feet on the rear platform of the armored carriage. He vaults the metal railing, climbs onto the carriage roof, and walks towards the tank. The pigtailed Native American dressed in black climbs onto the roof behind Jim and walks towards him. In the tank.
Them square in my sight, sire.
As do I, Munisha. As do I. Ah!
Jim jams the man down the funnel and the needle climbs on the gauge. A metal spear on a length of chain fires out of the turret and jams into the Wanderer's rear carriage. Jim jumps off the tank as the pressure build-up causes it to explode. The tank jams on its brakes and Gordon and Rita roll across the carriage floor.
I
won't let Loveless take me away. I'd rather be dead.
That's not a good thing to wish for.
Oh, please, Artie, don't leave me alone.
She shuts herself in the washroom with Gordon and a pool ball.
Rita, give me the ball.
No, I won't.
I have a plan.
Jim staggers through the carriage and bangs on the washroom door.
Gordon. It's Loveless.
Gordon,
it's a train.
Open the door.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
She presses on the ball and drops it. Gas fills the washroom as Jim comes in. Jim and Gordon sit within a small steel cordon at the side of a field of maize. They both wear metal double collars around their necks.
Innocent billiard ball this way, but depress the number and on impact, it ruins our mission.
Jim stands.
Let go of my leg.
Listen to me. Loveless has fitted us with the same metal device that we found on Morton.
Come on in, gentlemen. I trust you slept well.
What have you done with Rita?
Rita, is it? How familiar. Rita is sleeping off the after effects in the stateroom. She is quite lovely, isn't she? Who knows? I might even become familiar with her myself.
That'd be one more reason for me to kill you.
Oh, yes, Mr. West. I'm sure to a no doubt well-endowed blackamoor like yourself, it must seem absolutely impossible that a freak like me could fully enjoy the pleasure of a woman. But having witnessed my use of mechanology thus far, wouldn't you think that I could devise something for the lower half of my body that was hard, pumping, and indefatigably steely? And, speaking of hard pumping, Mr. Coleman, full steam ahead.
In The Wanderer, Amazonia holds a pistol to Coleman's head, and he releases the brake. The Wanderer chugs away, with Loveless grinning on the rear platform.
What a marvelous train. You don't mind me borrowing it, do you, gentlemen? Aside from a lack of wheelchair access, I find it a most comfortable way to pass the long miles from here to my laboratory in Spider Canyon. By the way, I'll be seeing President Grant soon at Promontory Point. What shall I tell him for you? I'm afraid it can't be that you're alive and well.
Get out your little toolkit, Gordon. Get this thing off my neck.
Gordon checks his pockets.
Tools are gone.
Gordon finds a note and reads it.
Gentlemen, welcome to the Loveless Experimental Camp for political dissidents. There are no guards, no barbed wire. As long as you stay within the designated perimeter, you will stay alive.
I don't have time for this.
No, don't!
Jim steps over the steel cordon.
See? Nothing.
He steps back in. A large mechanical contraption that Loveless left behind begins to whir and pump. One of the jagged metal discs with the spider logo slides along a conveyor and begins to spin.
And now we have to run.
The disc is fired out of the contraption and Jim and Gordon bolt into the maze field. A second disc is fired.
The collars are on our back, seeming to contain powerful magnets. As long as we can outrun the blade, we'll be fine.
Gordon, how long does it take a magnet to lose its power?
About 400 years.
Damn!
Jim and Gordon have split up and charged through the tall green stalks. The sharp metal discs pursue them at neck height, slicing through the tops of the maze. Jim ducks, the disc flies over him, then doubles back, forcing him to duck again.
The gully! The gully! Run for the gully! Ah!
They throw themselves to the ground, the discs double back.
Go, go, Gordon, go, go!
They run either side of a deep gully in the middle of the field, and each come to their respective edges. Gordon looks down at the 80-foot drop, then looks back. Jim calls across to him.
Gordon, leap into my arms!
No.
No!
They leap into the gully. The discs crash into each other and explode. Jim and Gordon land up to their necks in a lake of thick, reddish-brown mud at the bottom of the gully. Jim looks around and Gordon stares at him implacably. Jim twitches his nose, then sneezes mucus all over Gordon's face. Gordon flinches, then looks calmly back at Jim.
Bless you.
Sorry.
The carriage on the Wanderer.
Rita, my dear. Not that I'm ungrateful to Providence for bringing you back to me, but I have to confess.
Loveless rolls up to Rita.
I'm just a little bit curious as to how you managed to wind up with them.
Well, they seemed so sure that they could find you, I thought if I stayed with them, they'll bring me back to all my friends.
She's handed a drink.
Not to give you a big head, but I kind of missed you.
Well, isn't that a coincidence? Because I kind of miss me too.
Loveless chinks glasses with Rita. He drinks, then opens his mouth for Miss Lippenreader to pop in a grape. Jim and Gordon trudge along a rugged mountain range, the collars still round their necks.
Gordon, what's your plan for getting this thing off my neck?
Gordon looks bemused.
Excuse me. That's what you're here for. You're to master this mechanical stuff.
Oh,
I see. Now I'm the master of this mechanical stuff. As opposed to 5 minutes ago when I was calmly and coolly trying to find an intelligent solution to this very problem. But then something happened. Someone who will remain nameless...
Jim West!
...decided to jump over the wire, thereby providing us with that exhilarating romp through the cornfield and that death-defying leap into the abysmal muck. And here we stand, while that demented maniac is hurtling towards our president on our one and only mode of transportation, with Rita as his prisoner, armed with God knows what machinery of mass destruction, with the simple intention of overturning our government and taking over the country.
Look, Gordon, I think you need to calm down.
I can't be calm. No. I'm the master of the mechanical stuff! And I have to help you! You, the master of the stupid stuff! You want to get your collar off? I'll get it off. I don't have a gun, otherwise I'd shoot it off. Here's something in the true Jim West style. I'll just bash it with a rock.
Gordon, you don't want to do that.
Oh, but I do.
Gordon bashes Jim's collar with a rock. Suddenly, both collars are attracted tightly together.
What did you do? You've obviously reversed the polarity of your magnet. Be still.
Put my foot in your chest, but push off.
Jim raises his leg and the spike in his boot clamps onto Gordon's collar.
Yeah, I'm just peachy. Can you help me get my boot off, please?
Gordon puts his foot into Jim's groin for purchase.
Hey!
Oh, sorry.
Gordon strains and eventually pulls off Jim's boot. Jim makes to stand and suddenly finds his collar clamped to Gordon's waist.
And that would be my belt buckle.
Gordon, when you're telling this story to your grandkids, you make sure that you leave this part out.
Don't worry.
All right, Gordon. I'm going to undo your belt. I'm going to run as fast as I can that way. You run as fast as you can the other way.
Let me make sure I understand your plan. You're going to run as fast as you can that way, and I'm going to run as fast as I can that way. It's ingenious.
Whatever, Gordon. One, two, three!
Jim releases himself from Gordon's waist, and they both sprint off in opposite directions. Suddenly, they both sail back through the air towards each other, smash into each other, and tumble down the rocks into a lake. Gordon glances around and spots something to his right.
Oh, look. My auxiliary toolkit. I forgot all about it. It must have slipped out of my pocket.
Your pocket? Why wasn't it on some spring-loaded contraption that shoots out your ass?
That's the first place Lovelace would have looked.
That night, Jim and Gordon sit beside a campfire. Jim has been roasting a large lizard on a stick.
No. Thank you. I'm fine. Not quite myself out here.
Gordon's eyes widen.
There's a very large spider on your hand.
Jim raises his hand for a closer look.
He's just trying to get warm.
Jim smiles and calmly lowers his hand. The large, hairy spider crawls away.
How is it you know so much about the desert, anyway?
I lived out here as a boy. I was raised by the Indians.
Really? Now that is...
Hey, take a look at this. That's a desert wasp, one of the world's greatest hunters. She'll kill the tarantula, lay her eggs inside. So our babies will have some food when they hatch.
Now I'm really hungry. So how did your parents, who I assume were Negro, feel about you being raised by Indians?
Well, they didn't have too much to say about it. I was sent to another plantation when I was a boy. Ran away as soon as my legs were strong enough to take me.
Did you ever see your family again?
Jim stares distantly into the fire.
Yeah, they were at the camp at New Liberty.
Gordon also gazes into the flames. His eyes flick awkwardly towards Jim.
Get him, Jim.
The next day, Jim and Gordon trudge through the parched red desert. Gordon carries one of the metal collars.
You really have no idea where we're going, do you?
Not exactly where we're going. On Spider Canyon. We'd be getting there a lot faster if you weren't dragging that thing around.
A lot of scientific ingenuity and hard work went into the making of this. It'd be a shame to just discard it. Besides, you never know when a high-powered magnet might come in handy.
The collar suddenly jolts to the right. Gordon hangs onto it and is dragged across the dusty ground before coming to a sudden halt. Jim shakes his head and walks across to Gordon. The collar is clamped fast to one of two semi-concealed metal rails.
Well, Gordon, when you're right, you're right.
Jim and Gordon look along the rails.
Lovelace's private track.
The track stretches far into the distance. Later, Jim and Gordon have found the Wanderer.
This is not a mirage, and if this is not a mirage, then that...
is Spider Canyon. What now, Mr. Plan Man?
Now, well, what do we have? We have intelligence, we have a sense of purpose, we have the element of surprise. So, what does Lovelace have?
Jim and Gordon walk on to some jagged red rocks, which form a natural wall to the edge of a steep ridge. They look into the ridge, and Gordon's optimistic smile dissolves.
Well,
Gordon shrugs.
He has his own city.
Set within a deep canyon stands a huge Victorian-style metal and glass building, surrounded by smaller buildings. Suddenly, Lovelace and his entourage rise up over the ridge in a kind of metal cockpit. The cockpit forms the head of an enormous eight-legged metal contraption, which climbs out of the canyon like a huge insect. Jim and Gordon can only gape.
He has an 80-foot tarantula.
Yes, well, I was coming to that.
The huge metal spider passes over them.
Nice to see an invention that actually works.
Most impressive.
One of the machine's back legs clips one of the rocks, showering Jim and Gordon in red dust.
If a little ungainly.
It comes to a set of high rocky points.
Look, he's trapped. That thing will never get past those rocks.
The machine pauses for a moment, then shoots large fireballs out from a blaster under its thorax. The tall peaks crumble and collapse. Gordon's expression becomes grave, and Jim turns to him.
Gordon, let's go!
On the train, Jim smartened himself up. Mirrors slide down to reveal racks of guns.
Let's ride! You do know how to ride, don't you?
Yes, I know how to ride.
A horse.
Yes, when the situation calls for something primitive.
How about now? There's a gigantic spider stomping toward our president.
I was just thinking of another spider. You remember in the desert when we saw that little wasp destroy the tarantula?
The wasp had a slight advantage. It could fly.
Exactly. In 1540, Leonardo da Vinci designed a flying machine, but he never finished it. Now, with some extrapolation and a bit of imagination, I think
Artie,
I've come up
with... Artie, we don't have time for any of your plans or half-baked inventions.
He ushers Gordon out.
Gotta stick to what we each do best.
Jim cocks a small lever-action rifle with one hand. A little later, Jim, wearing a black three-piece suit and Stetson, gallops away from the wanderer on his black horse. Gordon gallops along behind him on a white horse. They both charge off into the distance.
May God continue the unity of our country. As this railroad unites the two great oceans of this world.
President Grant holds up the ceremonial railroad spike, and the audience and dignitaries applaud. A locomotive stands a few feet along the track as Grant bends over and places the spike into an indentation beside one of the railroad sleepers. He holds his hand out, and one of the aides gives him a sledgehammer. Grant prepares to swing the hammer as the spike suddenly drops out of the indentation. He frowns, and another aide places the spike back in. Grant prepares to swing again, and the spike jumps back out as the ground trembles. A few people in the audience grin, and some look concerned as the aide places the spike back in its indentation, and Grant smiles confidently at the audience. The spike jumps out again, and he stares down at it with a knitted brow. The distinguished President Grant slowly turns to look behind him. About 300 yards away, one of the metal spider's feet slams down onto the ground. The onlookers gawp in amazement. Grant remains steadfast, but looks astounded.
Good Lord.
With thick black smoke billowing out from a funnel in its head, the mechanical spider lurches towards the ceremony. Onlookers scatter, taking to their horses and carts, and a unit of cavalrymen cautiously backs away. Grant remains standing tall, facing the oncoming behemoth. He glances behind him to see that the racks of seating are now empty, and he is alone. The giant machine stops in front of Grant and lowers its head. Lovelace calls out from the cockpit platform.
Well now, isn't this a coincidence? I'm out for a little morning ride, and right in the middle of nowhere, I bump into General Ulysses S. Grant himself.
We've never been properly introduced. I'm Dr. Arliss Lovelace, formerly of the Confederate Army.
Yes, Dr. Lovelace.
Fine-looking spider you have there. What can I do for you today?
I have a humble abode nearby. I hope you'll accept my hospitality. I have a little proposition to make.
What proposition is that?
The immediate and unconditional surrender of the United States of America to the Loveless Alliance!
I didn't realize we were at war. You have me at somewhat of a disadvantage. I didn't bring my fly swatter.
Lovelace scowls and pushes a couple of wood and brass levers. The spider discharges two fireballs, which blow the locomotive to pieces. Grant remains standing firm.
How about now?
In matters pertaining to war, the person to talk to would be me.
And now just who are you?
I am the President of the United States. This man is an actor hired to stand in for me on public occasions. Not a very good actor at that. He's too fat and dull-witted.
You got a lot of brass, Gordon. Where's West?
You know him, sir.
Gordon's dressed as Grant. Jim climbs up one of the spider's legs.
Take this man away! Captain! Lieutenant! Sergeant! Private! You are dismissed, sir. Leave!
We'll take them both!
Lovelace shoves a lever and a large net falls over Grant and Gordon. They're then winched into the spider.
Part of your plan, Gordon?
Well, I'm by your side, sir. That's what counts.
Jim clambers up to the spider's cockpit. He's about to step over the railing as Munisha suddenly grabs his pistol and takes his gun belt.
I got a telegram for Dr. Lovelace from his mother, Irene. She told him, come on home, stop all this foolishness.
Munisha shoots Jim in the chest. He falls from the railing and lands heavily on the ground, raising a cloud of dust around him. Lovelace looks idly across at Munisha, then turns back with a callous smile. The spider slowly crawls forward over the motionless figure of Jim. Lovelace sits on stage before a giant flag bearing his emblem of a black and white Confederate sign with a large black spider in the center. His audience of men in gray uniforms applaud wildly. Grant, Coleman, Rita, and Gordon also sit on stage. The kidnapped scientists and engineers are handcuffed and sit at the front row of the men in gray.
Bonjour, buenas tardes, and good day. Great, glorious day. A day of healing. For the wrongs that have been done to us all. Oh, how long have we waited?
He rolls forward.
1776, wasn't it, old bean? The most expensive cup of tea in history.
A British officer smiles.
Manhattan for a handful of bees? How? Remember the Alamo, indeed.
Back at the railroad, Jim still lies spread-eagled on the ground, his eyes closed. Suddenly he moves his head, and his eyes flicker open. He looks from side to side, then raises himself up to a sitting position and puts a hand against his chest. Jim undoes a couple of buttons on his waistcoat, then rips open the lining to reveal some of Gordon's chainmail impermeable inside. Jim winkles a squashed bullet out from the impermeable and holds it between his fingers as he studies its flattened tip.
Thanks, Hardy.
Back in Lovelace's Great Hall,
today, I'm proud to be able to sit before y'all and tell you that the wrongs will be righted. The past made present, the united divided!
Lovelace's flag slides up to reveal a map of America. The USA has been divided into territories of Spain, Great Britain, France, Mexico, and Lovelace Land.
Great Britain gets back 13 original colonies minus Manhattan. Florida and the Fountain of Youth go back to Spain. Texas, New Mexico, California, Arizona revolve a Mexico. And a little piece for me to retire on.
The foreign delegates laugh. The rear carriage of the Wanderer has been ransacked as Jim kicks open the back doors and wearily trudges in. His white shirt is undone and grubby as he's lost his jacket and waistcoat on the way. He walks through to the bar area and presses a lever. The mirrors slide down and rotate to reveal the gun racks. All the weapons have been removed. Jim glances around, then walks on through the carriage, stopping as he treads on the belt Gordon showed him earlier. Jim picks up the belt and presses a button in the buckle. The front of the buckle flips open, and the tiny pistol pops out, poised for firing. Jim takes out a tiny bullet stored in the front flap of the buckle and examines it. He then turns and looks thoughtfully at Gordon's rack of disguises. In Lovelace's Great Hall,
my partner nations insist that we make this as legal as possible. And personally, I like the symmetry of it. After all, wasn't it you, President Grant, that made us sign a surrender at Appomattox?
Never will I sign that paper. Never will the United States ever surrender.
Grant stares at Lovelace and Rita smiles defiantly. Lovelace stares back broodingly as Grant sits.
Well, we're at loggerheads then, aren't we? And I suppose the threat of death to someone with your valorous war record would mean nothing. So, if you still refuse to sign the surrender, we'll start by shooting your man, Gordon.
Artemis.
Unisha!
Don't worry. I'm wearing an impermeable.
Gordon rises, and Amazonia leads him across the stage. She stands him to face Munisha, who holds an elaborate rifle and stands in front of Lovelace. Gordon steps forward.
May I make one request?
Lovelace cocks his head.
Would she aim at my heart? My heart, which has loved this country so much.
Shoot him in the head.
Damn.
Munisha! Ready? Aim!
Lovelace is about to issue the order when he suddenly stops and looks around in bewilderment. He turns his chair around as a dusky figure, the face partially covered by a veil of gold discs, and wearing a green Far Eastern dancing girl's outfit, slinks up on stage, doing an exotic dance.
New girl. Well, what a nice surprise.
The dancing girl stands over him, making snake-like hand gestures. She undoes a sash from around her waist and gyrates. A knowing smile spreads across Gordon's face. The dancing girl drapes her sash around Lovelace's neck and swoons towards him, surreptitiously stealing a set of keys from a hook on the back of his wheelchair. She turns away and Lovelace pinches her backside. She whacks him across the face and waggles her finger. Lovelace grins seedily.
Ebonia, why are you so cruel to me?
The dancing girl slinks around Lovelace and walks towards Gordon. Lovelace holds onto her sash and rolls after her. She gyrates and does a couple of high kicks, then shoos Lovelace back and turns to Gordon.
This brassiere is killing me.
Jim gives Gordon the keys. Gordon unlocks his handcuffs and gives the keys back to Jim.
And this garter belt is riding up my ass.
Be careful of that dress.
To hell with your damn dress, Gordon.
Jim gives Gordon the tiny pistol, then swans over to Grant and Coleman.
I'll be out of here in just a second, Mr. President.
Lovelace rolls over to them. Jim stops him with his bare foot, then gets into the chair with Lovelace. Grant turns to Coleman.
Is she with us?
Captain West, sir.
Oh, he's so graceful.
Rita smiles admiringly. Jim does a high kick over Lovelace's head, then leans down to him. Lovelace snarls like a playful dog, then reaches out to touch Jim's behind. Jim slaps Lovelace's hands, then plays teasingly with the tassels on his bra. Gordon frowns anxiously as the tassels begin twirling around of their own accord like helicopter blades. Jim stops and turns to Gordon, who turns away and indicates Lovelace. Lovelace's grin vanishes as flames shoot out of Jim's bra.
Kill him! Help!
Guards cock their guns and look at Lovelace in confusion. Jim fends the guards off with his flamethrower bra. Grant is kicked unconscious by Amazonia and dragged into a chamber with Lovelace as more guards storm in and open fire. Jim rolls a pool ball at them.
Is that the eight ball?
Yes, get down.
Jim and Gordon duck as the pool ball explodes.
That was not sleeping gas. No, the eight ball's an incendiary bomb.
They turn to the chamber.
The president.
Jim calls to Rita.
Show is over, let's go.
Save the president, we'll be fine.
She hugs one of the kidnapped scientists. Jim and Gordon run out.
We gotta do something. We gotta get horses. We gotta ride something.
Artie, right now we need to have a plan. Now that flying machine idea of yours, were you just acting like you knew what you were talking about? Or can you really build it?
They both look up to the lip of the canyon and see Lovelace's giant spider crawling out. Outside the Wanderer, Gordon's attached hang glider-style wings to his penny farthing.
Although he was considered insane by his peers, Bernoulli's theory states that the air flowing over a bird's wing is moving at a lower pressure than the pressure below the wing. That's called lift. And that is what we are now going to attempt. Of course, it's only a theory. It's never been tested.
Stop talking.
Here's a little bon voyage present for you guys. Gunpowder, nitroglycerin, and 44 caliber primers.
Coleman, how the devil do you know about explosives?
You asked Marshal Coleman. President thought you boys could use a little looking after. But I draw the line at defying gravity, so good luck.
Jim gets on the back of the bike as Gordon starts her up.
Hold on!
Avanti!
Flames blaze out of the penny farthing's twin exhaust pipes as the bicycle trundles off along the desert.
Avanti! Avanti! Why isn't this thing avanti? We're not getting enough lift! We need more speed!
Gordon thinks hard and glances around. To his left is a sheer drop leading down to a ravine. A thought occurs to him, and he smiles. Gordon steers the bicycle left and rides straight for the edge of the precipice. Jim looks concerned.
Gordy, that's a cliff! Yes, I know!
That means the ground is going to end.
Yes, I know.
Gordon!
They ride off the edge of the cliff and plummet like a stone. The bike swoops back up.
It works!
You had to get one right, Gordon. I'm sure glad it was this one.
Jim puts a hand on Gordon's shoulder.
So what kind of fancy name you got picked out for this thing? Wait, let me guess. An elevation enhancer or a gravity repeller vehicle?
No, I was thinking something simple. Air Gordon.
Lovelace sits at the controls of the Spider with a cigar jammed in his grinning mouth. Munisha holds a gun to Grant's head as the machine lurches towards a small frontier town.
Mr. President, I'll ask you once again. Sign the surrender or I will decimate this town.
You've had my answer.
Well, I understand your position, but I urge you to reconsider it in light of the following.
Lovelace pulls a lever and a fireball is shot at a large building, blowing it to fragments. Terrified townsfolk race on foot and on horseback through the dusty main street as the Spider fires again. Lovelace grins triumphantly at Grant. The town is little more than burning wreckage as a Spider slowly and deliberately lumbers along the main street, blasting buildings. A man gallops past on a covered wagon and just manages to jump clear as a fireball blows the wagon to bits. Grant looks down gravely as Munisha keeps the gun to his head. The Spider plods away from the decimated town as Gordon's flying bike suddenly whizzes over the burning buildings and follows it. Grant and Lovelace look behind them as the bike swoops down underneath the Spider. Lovelace opens fire and Gordon narrowly misses the speeding fireball. He climbs back up in an arc and Jim drops two bombs onto the top of the Spider's thorax. The bombs explode and the Spider lurches. Lovelace scowls as the penny farthing soars above him. Amazonia stands on the cockpit platform behind a Gatling gun. She fires on the bicycle, peppering the fabric on the wings with holes. Gordon struggles to control the bike as it plummets down and crashes into the Spider's cockpit platform, knocking Munisha over the edge.
Hang on, Mr. President!
They help Grant back onto the platform just as the bike falls to the ground. Amazonia holds a rifle.
Let's go.
Jim, Grant and Gordon face Lovelace, who sits, sardonically watching them, with his back to the controls.
Gentlemen, I am truly impressed by your effort and ingenuity. Why not swear an oath of loyalty to me and forego your execution?
Actually, I was thinking maybe I'd stuff your little half a ass in one of these cannons and fertilize the landscape with you.
Lovelace slaps the arm of his chair and Jim drops through a trap door.
We may not have a woodshed on board, but that boy is gonna get a whooping anyway!
Jim finds himself in an engine room. A tall man in grey with two metal stumps instead of hands steps out of the steam and faces him.
Oh, so what, you the one supposed to give me my whooping, huh?
A blade.
Well, hell, I got one of those.
A blade pops out of the man's other wrist.
Gordon only gave me one. If you give me a second, I'll see if Gordon...
The man swirls his arms around, the two long, sharp blades protruding from his metal stumps. He assumes an aggressive pose. Jim snarls and wiggles his foot. The man lunges. Jim avoids the blaze and raises his foot. The man chops the spike off his boot. Jim ducks as the man swings his blades at him. Another man with a railroad spike right through his shaven head swings at Jim with a huge spanner and catches him across the chest. Gordon watches the fight through the trapdoor and looks with concern at the smirking Lovelace. Jim's kicked to the ground as another man jumps in front of him and screams. The screaming man slams down a shovel and Jim scrambles back to avoid the blows. The screaming man attacks Jim with the shovel and Jim punches him in the face. The man with the spike swings his spanner at Jim, who parries the blows.
That's it. No more Mr. Knife Guy.
Jim and the man with the shovel wrestle until Jim punches him in the face and uses the shovel to defend himself against the man with the spike. The spiked man tries to punch Jim, who holds his shovel in front of his face. He punches it, and Jim knocks him out cold. The other man suddenly does some kung fu kicks and assumes a martial arts pose.
Hey! I learned that from a Chinaman.
Jim brains him with the shovel.
I just made that up.
Another man appears, the skins missing from the top of his head, revealing a steel skull.
Nice hat.
Jim punches his jaw and winces. He then punches his stomach and kicks his groin. The remaining skin around the top of the tall man's head has been riveted to the steel skull in an untidy scene. He grabs Jim's throat and lifts him off the ground. Jim tries to pound at the man's rigid arm and is punched across the room. The man lumbers towards Jim, who grabs the large spanner and brings it down on his steel skull. Sparks fly and the man keeps coming. Jim strikes him in the head and face with the spanner several times, but the man continues steadfastly advancing. Jim finds himself backed up to the edge of the walkway with a long drop behind him. He looks the man in the eye.
Sorry.
Jim holds out the spanner. The man takes it, then screams and raises it above his head. His head suddenly smokes, begins to spark, and light flickers inside it. He freezes and falls out of the spider. In the cockpit.
Take over the control!
Lovelace rolls over to a trapdoor and presses a button on the control panel of his wheelchair. The trapdoor slowly lowers him down among the spinning cogs and gears of the engine room. He looks around and can see no sign of Jim. As the trapdoor reaches the floor, Jim suddenly swings down from a gantry and kicks Lovelace in the chest. Lovelace's chair flies backwards and gets lodged in a gap between some railings. Jim drops down and smiles cockily.
Now somebody around here promised me a whooping. Dark-haired fella, crazy beard about your height, seen him? You know, Lovelace, I guess when it comes right down to it, you just can't beat a good old-fashioned pair of legs.
Well, you're obviously not a poker player, Mr. West.
He walks forward.
Four of a kind always beats a pair.
Now, was it someone particularly close to you who perished in that military action?
Jim punches Lovelace, who spins around.
Well, that struck a nerve.
Lovelace kicks Jim to the ground and stamps on his hand with his metal foot.
I like to beat my feet on the Mississippi mud!
Gordon calls down. He looks at Amazonia.
Please!
Drop it!
A pistol's popped out of Gordon's sleeve without him realizing.
Stop or I'll shoot. You expect to kill me with that little pea shooter?
If I have to, yes.
Well, why is it that I am unafraid?
Shoot him, Gordon!
Gordon prepares to shoot and Lovelace stares up at him.
Shoot him!
Gordon grits his teeth and fires.
After all that, you missed?
Actually, I didn't.
Lovelace looks down at his mechanical legs. Orange fluid is spraying from the ankle of one of them. The foot is removed from Jim's face.
Thank you. The chivalry's about to be tested.
Miss Lippenreader hits Gordon. Amazonia prepares a punch. She punches Gordon in the face. Down below, Lovelace's damaged legs lower him to the floor. Jim gets to his feet and stands over him.
Well, 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 Dr. Lovelace. I bet you thought it was pretty damn funny, big metal foot on my face and all. If you ask me, somebody around here owes somebody else around here an apology.
Lovelace spots the gun in the arm of his wheelchair. Gordon and Grant fight the women. Amazonia falls off.
Gordon, quit dancing around and get over here. Figure out how to run this damn thing.
You're right.
We got a real problem up there.
The spider lumbers towards the edge of a cliff.
Please, Mr. West.
Lovelace shuffles to his chair.
Mercy!
Now don't you fret none, Dr. Lovelace. We got a lovely little half a jail cell picked out for you.
Please, sir, you fine dark warrior.
Finding the right combination of levers.
Very good. Don't do that again.
I have always admired you, Mr. West. I want you to understand that.
Lovelace grabs two chains and hauls himself up into his wheelchair. The spider has almost reached the edge of the cliff.
Years I've been chasing the animal responsible for the massacre at New Liberty. Now I hear tell that's you.
I am not an animal. I am a visionary. I am a genius. And now I am angry. And after I kill you, I swear I'm gonna boil you down for axle grease.
He fires the shotgun, and Jim moves just in time. The shot puts holes in two pipes. Cogs spark and seize. The spider stops and teeters over the cliff edge. Lovelace almost rolls out. but gets wedged between two railings.
Lovelace!
Jim nearly falls out, but grabs Lovelace and hangs on.
Well, I'll be a monkey's uncle. How did we arrive in this dark situation?
I have no idea, Dr. Lovelace. I'm just as stumped as you are.
They hang out of the spider.
I'm facing a very difficult problem here. On the one hand, I have the overwhelming love I have for myself, and on the other, the raw, seething hatred that I have for you. Now, I could kill you very easily, Mr. West, just by pulling on this lever, but I would die along with you, hence my conflict.
The spider tips further over.
Decisions.
Allow me to make that decision for you, Lovelace.
Mr. West, although you are as black as the night on the outside, inside, you are yellow. You just don't have it in you, do you?
He sneers.
Boy.
Jim grabs the lever in the arm of Lovelace's chair and pulls. The wheels turn and the chair dislodges. Jim grabs onto the legs of the man with the blades, whose chain got hooked up in one of the spider's legs. Lovelace plummets to the ground. Jim hangs onto the dead man with the blade's feet and stares down at where Lovelace fell.
Now that's a whooping.
He dangles high up in the air. Grant hammers the ceremonial spike into the railroad sleeper. Crowds cheer and throw their hats into the air, and a photographer takes a photo. Grant walks over to Jim and Gordon.
Gentlemen, you'll be happy to know I'm creating a new agency, whose sole purpose is the protection of the president. Welcome to the Secret Service, agents number one and number two.
Thank you, Mr. President. Do you mind if I ask, which one of us is agent number one, which is number two?
I don't think that really matters, Gordon. Do you?
Not if you don't, sir.
Anyway, you'll have plenty of time to discuss it on your new assignment. See you in Washington, gentlemen.
Grant hands Gordon a note, then salutes and walks off. Gordon and Jim salute back. Gordon opens the note and reads.
Mr. President, what about our train?
Well, I'm taking it, of course. Hell, you let Lovelace blow up mine.
Grant waves as he leaves on the Wanderer.
Jim, Artie. My heroes.
Rita, look at you.
They kiss her.
That's a right fine dress you got on there.
I just wanted to thank you for everything that you've done for me before I went back home to Texas.
Texas?
Why are you going back to Texas?
What do you mean?
I was thinking maybe you'd come back to Washington with me.
Or better yet, come back to Washington with me.
I'm afraid I haven't been completely honest with you. Professor Escobar is not my father. He's my husband.
You could have told us that from the beginning, Rita.
Yes.
Rita, dear, we really must be going.
Rita leaves with Professor Escobar.
Bye.
Gordon looks glum. Rita turns back to them.
At least you still have each other.
She waves. Gordon and Jim stand beside each other and watch her go. Jim dons his black hat, and Gordon dons his white one. The picture dissolves to a tall, thin, rocky point in the middle of the desert. Jim and Gordon are side by side and bob up and down as they ride through the desert.
Jim?
What now, Artie?
Do you mind if I ask you a question?
Actually, I do, Artie.
They head into the distance, standing together on the cockpit platform of Lovelace's giant mechanical spider. Gordon operates the controls as the huge machine lumbers towards a bright golden sunset. ITFC audio description was written by Matthew Vickers and Alan Blyton, and read by Matthew Vickers.
Gunning this, brother running this, buffalo soldier. Look, it's like I told ya. Any damsel that's in distress, be out of that dress when she meet Jim West. Rough neck, so go check the lawn to buy. Watch your step, reflex, and get a hole in your side. Swallow your pride, don't let your lip react. You don't wanna see my hand where my hip be at. With Artemis from the start of this, running the game. James West, taming the West, so remember the name. Now who you gonna call?
Not the GB.
Now who you gonna call?
GW.
If you ever riff with fever, wanna bust, break out before you get bum rushed at
the Wild Wild West.
When I roll into the
Wild Wild West,
when I stroll into
the Wild Wild West.
when I bounce into the
wild, wild west.
Cisco,
we're
Cisco.
Once upon a time in the West, madman lost his damn mind in the West. Love less, kidnapped or dying, nothing less. Now I must put his behind.